Welcome back to the Union Edge of Laborers Talk Radio. I'm Brittany Sheets here with Angela Bachman.
Hello.
We've been having fun on this fine Friday. Thank you all for joining us. And joining us now to join the fun, we have Buck Gino of Work in Progress Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies. It's good to be with you. It's always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure to have you, too. Joining the fun.
Yeah.
Studio party.
Well, I was going to start off the segment by asking you ladies a question. I don't know if you've been asked this or seen anything about this, but I was quite taken by the comment by, I believe is supposed to be the next CEO of Microsoft, says that women should not ask for a pay raise. They should just wait because the employer, out of the goodness of their heart, will just give you one. What do you think of that?
For real?
Like, specifically women, not everybody?
Yeah, that's it was specifically said women, right.
I did not hear that, actually. And that's very interesting because there's a big issue in the tech world specifically because it's a very male-dominated industry. And there's actually a push because of there's not a lot of female presence in the tech industry, basically. And they're really trying to get more females involved and stuff like that, trying to even out the numbers a little bit because it's so male-driven. So it's very interesting that he would come out and say that whenever specifically they're being targeted for their lack of female hires.
Well, I find it interesting because I've never known any employer. I mean, I've worked for several in my lifetime, more than several, and I would argue I've never known any employer out of the goodness of their heart just walk up and say, we think you're doing a good job, we're just going to give you a raise.
Yeah, really. No. It don't work that way.
But I also, with you, I found it strange that he basically, you know, in some ways targeted the female gender. So.
Oh, yeah, not in some ways. He outright definitely, the fact that he specifically said female is ridiculous. I mean, we already know that you don't want to give up any more money than you have to, but really to say women shouldn't ask for more money, why? Why should men ask for more money? I'd like to ask him that.
Well, maybe you should send him an email. But the part of it is this is just a weekly thing. It goes back to, I think we talked about a little bit about this last week in Michigan, where the governor or whoever is running his campaign here decided to put out the ad where women were basically trying on wedding dresses.
Mm-hmm.
And they I'm just saying it goes to the big picture of what the conservative right wing or Republicans really think of women.
It's true. It really does stem back to that. Because that leads into everything we talked about last week about how they think women don't do anything or you can't reach out to them unless you're on a level of wedding dresses and shopping and pampering. Which is wrong.
As a woman, you really should have a hard time voting for anybody that comes from that party. I think, it's just a shame that it's become more prevalent. You know, years ago, they thought it, but they didn't say it. But just within the last few years, I would argue since the Tea Party got involved in the process, that they've become more bold in saying things like that.
I agree.
So I'm not exactly blaming the Tea Party, but I'm in some ways with their aggression and their thoughts on different things. I think it's brought it to the forefront. Just look at the comments during the last presidential election about I think it was the guy from Missouri who was talking about how women didn't need to have such things of abortion, that if they got raped, that they could basically just shut it off. So, like I say, I think it's a bigger picture. I think that that's why we need to not elect these people, period.
I agree. And I think, to me, the most frustrating thing is that they insist on adding that dividing line. You are female, you are male. We're all just people. Can we just be treated like humans? That's really all I want. I don't need something special. I just need you to recognize that I'm not that different from you. We're all people, and I want to be treated like a person. It's not that hard.
Not that hard, but like I said, it just seems like, you know, what gets me about it is too is you look down up and down the elected officials, and one that comes to mind for me, I think she is a congresswoman out of Tennessee. I Blackmer, or even people like the gal from Minnesota. What's her name? Michelle Bachmann. Mm-hmm. I mean, how they could even be even tied to a group like that is really astonishing to me.
I agree, and I guess here's another thought: these women who stand for this kind of stuff, like say Michelle Bachmann. She's in government and she's worked very hard to get that role, and she's had to assert her to get into a role like that. You really have to assert yourself and work hard and be driven and ignore the rhetoric and get past it and really basically not do what they're typecasting you to do in these roles because you're a woman. And then she gets in this role and turns around and agrees with exactly what she just fought against to get to the place that she is.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the part where, or to sit on your hands, or her hands, or any of them, any woman in a political office, to sit on your hands and not stand up to say things like, this isn't right and we shouldn't do that. I mean, being in political office, they have what you would call the bully pulpit. You know, I mean, they can call a press conference, they can do anything and say, you know, call everybody out on this, but they refuse to do that because, you know, they for whatever reason, I don't know. Like I said, it just struck me odd that a CEO from Microsoft would go to that level.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I'm surprised I didn't see any headlines about that yet, because I feel like something like that, not in just the grounds of how things are currently, but specifically from the tech industry, that would have seen a lot of backlash because, I mean, I graduated with a degree in that general area of tech and the big push they had. I was like, I'd take classes where I was one of like two girls in it and the rest of it's guys. And something we actually had conversations about while I was in school was how to get more women and females involved in just that industry, because it's an industry that's lacking in female perspective. So that's very interesting because they're supposed to be pushing for that and they've caught a lot of flack recently for that. And he came out and said that, and that contradicts everything that they're trying to establish right now.
Well, like I said, and you know, you listened a few months ago that there was another CEO, I believe, of a company that is based out of San Francisco, who actually sat on stage and basically said, look, you know, I believe that, you know, for every dollar that I pay in property tax, I should get one vote. And the people that don't have any property or have a small parcel of property should get equal number of votes for what they pay in property taxes. So that's the mentality of what's going on here with this extreme right. You know, they don't believe that we have the right to vote. Look what's going on with the voter suppression laws. You talked about one earlier in Wisconsin and the same thing in Texas. And they did it here in Michigan with the ID thing. So, like I said, this is a broad range, big ten, if you will, and this is how they believe that they're going to take over America. And the only way to stop them, obviously, is through a ballot box.
Mm-hmm. True. That's very true. The best way to get out there is to cast your vote. That's your best way you can give your opinion and support someone you feel that supports your own thoughts and what you are interested in and for your own well-being. And, I mean, that's the least we can do and the only way we can do it, other than educating yourself on who it is that you're voting for.
Exactly. That's why it's so important for us to do, and you, and Charles, and the rest of the Union Edge to do what you're doing every day.
Oh, thank you.
We think so. But Buck, we got to take a short break right now, so we are going to come back in just a couple of minutes, and we will continue this discussion. That's Buck Gino from Work in Progress Radio. I'm here with Brittany Sheets, and I'm Angela Bachman on the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Thomas Bishop. Conservative media and elected officials continue to hype fears that members of the Islamic State terrorist group are using the U.S.-Mexico border to enter the U.S. and launch terrorist attacks. Fox News' Greta Van Susteren recently provided a platform for Representative Duncan Hunter to make this claim.
If you really want to protect Americans from ISIS, you secure the southern border. It's that simple. ISIS doesn't have a navy. They don't have an air force. They don't have nuclear weapons. The only way that ISIS is going to harm Americans is by coming in through the southern border, which they already have.
I know
that at least 10 ISIS fighters have been caught coming across the Mexican border in Texas. There's nobody talking about
that?
It. Because I've asked the Border Patrol, Greta.
But according to the Department of Homeland Security, which oversees the border security, this claim is, quote, categorically false. As DHS told The New Republic, this suggestion is, quote, not supported by any credible intelligence or the facts on the ground. For more on this and other stories, visit MediaMatters.org.
When Dad needed help getting around, I became his driver. Soon enough, it was up to me to be his housekeeper and financial manager, too. When he moved in, I became his cook and even his nurse. But no matter what roles I play, I know I'm still his daughter.
We understand the roles you play. So to help, we created AARP.org/caregiving, where you can connect with experts and other caregivers. Visit AARP.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 66, works with builders and contractors to build a better community. Local 66's tradesmen and women have received the specialty training needed to meet the complex challenges of any project, making them the most capable workforce in the region. From schools, highways, and pipeline projects to casinos and arenas, the operating engineers build any job, large or small. For over 100 years, Local 66 has provided superior service that our community can count on. They are your one-stop resource for qualified and productive operating engineers and heavy equipment mechanics. To learn more about the benefits of organized labor and more information about the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 66, go to www.iuoe66.org. That's www.iuoe66.org.
Imagine me, a dog, moving in with a human. I didn't know how it would work. Turns out, my human's pretty entertaining. For instance, every time I give my human his ball, he throws it as far as he can. And I'm like, dude, that's your ball. So I go get it. But he just throws it. Again. I gotta say, though, the more he does it, the funnier it is. I love my human.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Hi, I'm LeVar Burton, and I'm proud to be a book person. How do I choose a book? Sometimes it's the cover, sometimes it's the title. I guess I'm pretty visual. If a book's really impressing me and the writing is really good, I will peek and see what the last paragraph is, because the endings of books should rock you. I am a book person, and if you're a book person too, read to a child and spark a lifetime of ambition. Join me at bookpeopleunite.org, because reading is fundamental. A public service announcement brought to you by Reading is Fundamental, Library of Congress, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. I'm Brittany Sheets here with Angela Bachman on this fine Friday.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. And on the line with us, we have Bach Gino of Work in Progress Radio.
It's great to be with you. Ladies, always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure.
And it's great to be Friday, right? That's one of the things you never lose, when even when you retire, that feeling of a Friday.
It's just something about it. It's just like, you know, it's Friday, and it's just like, yes. I mean, I've even had semesters where I didn't have classes on Friday, and it was like Thursday was my Friday. But it was like I still woke up on Friday and had that feeling of, oh, it's Friday.
Yeah, it's, and that's one of the things that we can thank organized labor for.
That's very true.
You know, ladies, I wanted to spend a little time on this segment talking to you about something that's going on politically, and I think it's going across the whole country. I've been involved in politics for over 40 years. I've served as an local elected official since 1995. And I've been involved in, like I said, a lot of campaigns. But one of the things that is really strange to me, we've always looked at, you know, political campaigns, and there's always been things like the Vietnam War. Obviously, there was the World War II, World War I, or the Korean conflict, or some little thing that goes on. I was talking to one of the candidates who was running for state representative, and he was asking me perhaps for a little bit of advice. And he says, you know, that I'm out there, and when I talk to people, they talk about how, you know, they may support the other person because of their feelings on what they call Obamacare and or President Obama. And I thought for a moment, and I thought, you know, it's a pretty simple answer. And it's going all, and I checked, and I went on some, did some research, and it's gone on all over the country. And some people even take it farther, where they talk about they're running against Harry Reid and things like that. And I said, you know, the simple answer to that is number one, you know, you're running a race against your opponent. Mm-hmm. He's not running against Barack Obama. And the other part was is that I love candidates to say, you know what, as far as the Affordable Care Act goes, you know, the first two words says it all. The Affordable Care Act. What that means is that there's a great number of people in the country that now can afford insurance that couldn't get it before. And the best part about the Affordable Care Act that I know is that we have millions of children, millions, literally millions of children that were denied health care or would have been denied health care by the insurance companies because they had a pre-existing condition.
True. That's a very valid point.
And I think that is what I, you know, instead of these candidates, you hear sometimes candidates as, I don't mean to pick on anyone, they tend to try to, when they're out there, when it gets close to the time and they're in the end like we are now and the game is really on, they try to hedge their bet a little bit and they try to make a circle and make everybody happy. And I've always been to the mind that if you try to make everybody happy, you're going to make everybody unhappy. So what you do is I would inspire some of these candidates to go out, and you know you can pick out anything you want about the Affordable Care Act, the part of about where they have to use the money now for actual insurance instead of putting it in their pocket or refund it to the people. Like I said, I don't know if you hear it in Pennsylvania, but it's rampant here, all the way from the governor, all the way down to even seems like a county commission races. You hear the rhetoric about how. They call it Obamacare and or President Obama. And like I said, I for one, I think that you really should put your arms around it and speak to the people about what it really does. What do you think?
I mean, I agree. I think it's definitely good for you. And I feel like, I mean, it was put in because of people need it and people need health care. And it's something that's important. And when you look at the long-term pluses of it, I mean, there's the possibility of, like, with people having health care, they'll head off serious illnesses, or if you're sick or something like that, much sooner than they would if you just let it go because you don't have that health care coverage, so you don't go unless you've got a really serious problem. And then that involves emergency room costs, which ups everybody's costs, and it has some really good implications, and it's good for the long run. And I just think, I don't know, I support it. I think it's a good thing. I think everyone should have the healthcare coverage. It's something that can help you and not hurt you. It's always good to go see a doctor if something isn't right, rather than let something progress and get much worse where you have to have much more treatment because it started out as something simple and you didn't go to have it checked. And also, I don't see the point of shooting it down so many times in the government because it costs like thousands of dollars, if I'm not mistaken, every time they try to vote to take it back down.
That's exactly right. But I think that, you know, I think when you look at these candidates and you look at, such media outlets as Fox News, and every day there's something on there about health care or the president, I just think that what we have to remind people is that in any race that you're looking at, whether it's all the way down from a township official all the way up to a U.S. senator, that you have two, maybe sometimes three people, and those are the candidates. It's not President Barack Obama. It's not Harry Reid. It's not Mitch McConnell. It's not Allison Grimes. It's not Gary Peters or Terry Leland. It's those two candidates. And you cannot allow the discussion to go to the Affordable Care Act or the president. You know, you have to remind people about really who the races are about.
Yeah, the Affordable Care Act is now a law. It's mm-hmm. a thing. Yeah. It exists. So we can stop debating it and pretending that it's still something to be discussed because it's not. It's over. It's done.
This comparing to the president is a very similar tactic that's happening in, I believe it's Kentucky right now.
Yeah.
A big leg of Mitch McConnell's fight against Alison Lindgren Grimes is literally, he's comparing her to President Obama and saying, at one point I seen that he criticized her for not running for a higher office like she had previously promised or something to that effect. And it was just a really weird, outrageous claim where I almost feel like if you're grasping that hard that you want to take your opponent and all you do is compare them up and down to the current president, then you're not fighting them as a candidate. you're not talking about the issues of your people who you're supposed to be campaigning for, and two, you're not talking about the issues that are really at hand. You're too busy trying to compare your opponent to someone who they're not running against, has nothing to do with them, and has nothing that pertains to the actual race. And I just feel like that's a waste and should tell people you shouldn't vote for that person because they're not actually campaigning about anything of relevancy that matters to you of importance.
You know, years, if you look at history, years and years ago, they fought and did the same thing to Social Security. That was the worst thing that ever happened, according to some people. And they fought and fought and fought for years to try to repeal that. So, like I said, as I think what Angela said, that, you know, this is law. This is what it's going to be, and this is how we're going to, it's going to be that way from now on. And like I said, we just have to remind people that. And it's the Affordable Care Act. It's not Obamacare. Something that creates an affordable system for people to get health care, and it creates an environment where children that are have pre-existing conditions can be covered. And for me, that alone is enough to have.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree. I think it's very important, and I think that people need to disassociate the negative press from the actual issue and need to honestly look at what it honestly will do for people and stop looking at just the negative, because if you really look at it, it's actually a positive.
Exactly.
Well, Buck, it's been great. We're out of time here for today, but we've been happy to have you, and thanks for joining us.
It's always a pleasure. Have fun today, Jared.
Thanks.
Awesome. That was Buck Gino of Work in Progress Radio. I'm Brittany Sheets here with Angela Bachman, and you've been listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, is calling for more extensive health screenings of passengers traveling from areas affected by the Ebola outbreak. The union represents 60,000 flight attendants at 19 airlines. The flight attendants say the globalization of air travel and today's aviation industry requires new, stronger measures to protect passengers and crews. A report from the New York Committee for Occupational Safety and Health, NICOSH, shows 8,600 air hazard to passengers. The hazards include exposure to biohazards like bodily fluids, as well as unlabeled chemical cleaners, diesel emissions, ear-splitting noise, and temperature extremes. The workers most often work for subcontractors who fail to provide them with adequate protective gear and training. NICOSH's Charlene Obernauer says these hazards are preventable.
We really found that there were significant hazards and risks to workers' safety, and that many of these safety health hazards that workers face are also hazards that passengers who frequent airports may also be exposed to. A lot of the hazards that are listed here in this report could easily be mitigated, and most of them are actually preventable and would be very small fixes for the employer to address.
The labor union, 32BJSEIU, plans to hold infectious disease training sessions for New York airport workers next week. Chicago fast food workers are going to Ferguson, Missouri this weekend for Ferguson October, a weekend of resistance. It's 4 days of actions demanding justice for Mike Brown, the unarmed black teenager shot to death by Ferguson police, and to also demand an end to violent policing nationwide. Among many sponsoring organizations are the St. Louis NAACP, Domestic Workers Alliance, Code Pink, and SEIU healthcare workers from Illinois, Indiana, Missouri, and Kansas. Eight New York car wash workers have filed suit against Vegas Auto Spa, claiming more than $600,000 in back wages are owed by the company. The employer's total liability could exceed $1 million. The workers claimed there were overtime and other violations. They say this demonstrates the need for passage of the Car Wash Accountability Act in New York City, which is currently before the city council. It would require companies to be licensed and to put up surety bonds to cover substantiated claims of wage theft. The nonpartisan Congressional Government Accountability Office has released a study showing that voter turnout in two states dropped after they enacted photo voter ID laws. GAO says it compared turnout in Kansas and in Tennessee to turnout in four comparison states that had no changes in their voter ID laws from the 2008 to the 2012 general elections. GAO says its study suggests that turnout decreased in Kansas and in Tennessee more than in the selected comparison states of Alabama, Arkansas, Delaware, and Maine. Kansas turnout declined by an estimated 1.9 to 2.2 percentage points, and in Tennessee, voter turnout dropped by 2.2 to 3.2 percent. The decline was higher among young voters and among African Americans.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.